It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song. In the center of our service, in the center of our lives, let us make room for life's quieter sides. You may use these first moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here. We are all caretakers of sacred treasures. It isn't something dramatic, not a prop from an action movie. It's about our souls, our spirits, and the spirits of others. We are all the caretakers of those sacred treasures. The German poet Rilke wrote that the vision that calls us forward blesses us even if we do not reach it. It's like saying that if we can learn to live life in the right key, we're blessed even if we don't get the melody right. It's saying that we need a certain kind of seriousness about life, that life deserves, demands that we take seriously the question of how we are to live. Theists would say we must stand before God, but that God has mercy. The Romans used to say that we should always live as though all the greatest people of history were watching us, then only do those things we would do in front of that audience. That has high demand, but little mercy. These sound and feel nearly impossible and quite intimidating. Then we remember Rilke's promise that these visions that call out our true names, that call us forth into lives of such high ideals, such high integrity, that if we take them seriously, these visions, and follow them, that the visions will bless us whether we reach them or not. Honest religion is life-giving, even as it is intimidating. Yet there are two kinds of people in the world. Those who are alive and those who are afraid. Let us not be afraid to be alive. Amen.
The end of November 2003, when I thought I better start looking for an internship. I had already graduated from a Baptist seminary 5 years earlier. I had also worked as a chaplain in a big teaching hospital for about a year after that. The next thing I wanted for my education in the ministry was a chance to explore the role of a minister in a church. I had relatively little experience personally with such a role because of not growing up in a church. First thing I did was to check out the Unitarian Universalist Association's website, finding the internship clearinghouse, basically a list of all the congregations in the association who would be willing to host an intern for a set period of time. The list I downloaded was maybe of 50 or 60 congregations. How should I narrow this field, I wondered, and then I took the rational Indian approach to all things career. I looked for the best-paying internships. That quickly narrowed the field to two churches. First Parish UU of Concord, or you all, or y'all. I shot off email inquiries to both churches. We would be coming from India, so it hardly mattered where the church was, East Coast, West Coast, or heart of Texas. With the Concord Church, the only other church which paid their intern a grand total of $1,500 stipend per month for a 40-hour work week, and that's $8.75 an hour for those of you who are going to be figuring it out anyway, there began a predictable process of emailing a contact person who sent me a list of required materials to be forwarded. But with this church, little did I know that my initial inquiry would go straight to the head honcho. And thus began the whirlwind. Now, I was in India, where your day is their night, and your night is their day, and when Texans go to bed, Indians are waking up. It is almost exactly halfway around the world, which is how I came to learn very early on that Davidson is an insomniac who answers emails throughout the night. From the very first, Davidson gave me the treatment. He wanted to know where I was at spiritually, what I meant when I talked about Unitarian Universalism as a religion. If UUism was a religion, what were its beliefs? And what was I wanting to get from an internship? Right off the bat, he made clear what it was he had to offer to an intern, and that was clarity. He said, quote, I want interns to learn what, if anything, they really believe, and then to be able to say it in ordinary language with no jargon. This is hard, he warned, and liberating. He told me he was a tough teacher, but that his loyalty was fierce also, if you could earn it. And if I have learned anything, it is that Davidson is true to his word. And I have loved that about him, and that has helped me cope with his sky-high standards of preaching. He introduced this bias from his second emailed note to me when he said, quote, sermons are an art, a momentary intimacy, a conduit for insights, a reconnection with ultimate concerns. It's our main art form, and we should be good at it. Now, I probably should have turned and run away when I heard all this, but I was totally snagged. In the time I had between our emails for the next 10 days which followed, I lived and breathed his questions. I could barely concentrate on anything else. Davidson started educating me about what he saw as liberal religion. Good, honest religion that understands, quote, all people and creatures as related and of value, not just some by some definition, end quote. He kept up with the questions, and I tried to field them as honestly as I could. But they are not easy questions to answer. Where are you at spiritually? Is there some kind of multiple choice answer to that, like you'd find in a women's magazine? Spiritually, where I am at is A, saved by Jesus, B, liberated from the church and doing okay, or C, exploring meditation and vegetarianism, or D, not sure. How would you answer such a question? Davidson invited me here in the end, I think, because I had the guts to say, not sure. For me at the time, I was pretty confused, especially after seminary, about what spirituality meant. Before I had had much contact with Christians and the God they confessed, the spiritual dimension of an individual had to do with their character, their propensity to tell truth, to think and reflect about the consequences of their actions on others, about their propensity to see the humor in situations, to dance or clown or frown. This kind of spirit did not survive death except in the memories of others. This kind of spirit is not limited to humans, but most certainly included the individual natures of animals. This kind of spirit showed up in expressive forms. You could sense it in the observations of writers. You could see it in paintings and in faces. You could feel it in an embrace. When I got to seminary, it was the first time in my life that I was surrounded by people who shared a belief that there was a clearly articulated plan for human existence. I knew that I did not share their basic worldview, but I did believe that our beliefs are fundamental to what we are and what we can become. So I was curious and eager to be among them, to try to understand their worldview and to see how it affected them. And this openness to learning I had was described by folks at the seminary spiritually as seeking. My academic advisor had me ask Jesus to come into my heart. I wasn't sure what that would do, but the idea of the importance of our willingness to do good and to be aligned with the good in no uncertain terms made sense to me. In similar ways, I came to believe in many new spiritual possibilities at seminary. I came to believe in the power of prayer, to give voice to our heart's yearnings and to give ear to the heart's yearnings of others. I came to believe in the power of confession and absolution, that it is within us to be witness to the frailty and brokenness of in one another and to become an agent of healing in the process. Not by what we do as much as by our mere presence and the truth we treasure. I came to believe in grace, not that the Creator God answered our individual needs, but that sometimes, through no effort of our own, our needs are met in the unfolding of the cosmos. I chose to focus on the universalism which emerged out of the Baptist tradition in America, understanding that however mysterious a God force might be, surely it flowed throughout the creation. I never believed in the ideas of a chosen people or the damned, but I resonated with the idea of living in right relationship to everything else. This was the possibility I was committed to. This is still what I am seeking after. Davidson questioned me about what I thought my religious center was. He wanted to know what ministry meant for me, why I would do it. These particular questions came 5 days after our conversations began, and they are still alive between us in our relationship, and I hope they always will be. Being unable to answer what my religious center is definitively, I have at least come to a better appreciation of what Davidson means by such a term. It is about, quote, the most authentic center of your being, where your head and your heart connect, end quote. Liberal religion is all about allowing that center to be different for each of us. The liberal religious path, then, is one that does not take its direction from the doctrines put forth by one branch of a church or another, but it takes its path from our seeking to understand ourselves and our connection to everything else and to live out of that, striving to express our real values in ways that serve the good. Now, I came here this year with a whole lot of learning goals about parish ministry, about pastoral leadership, and about preaching. I did not list among them getting religion. But as I reflect back on the time here and the struggles I have had in seeking out a worthy message to each sermon I have written, I realize that the responsibility which comes with being a religious liberal is none other than the responsibility to be challenged and to develop positive, constructive, and grounded, and with Davidson, defendable, understandings of what you really believe and how your beliefs can make you a better person and the world a better place. It was the same challenge that Davidson posed to me when he offered me the chance to learn here with him and all of you, and it is a challenge for every one of us. So picture this. I have spent the last 10 months rushing into David's office, breathlessly giving voice to what I have figured must be my religious core, only to have him sit back and consider my discovery for a moment and ask some very pointed questions that busted my bubble every time. It has been a discouraging and disappointing process for the two of us at times, and I have struggled with what motivates me to write a sermon. But I do have some strong beliefs, and whether they articulate my religious core adequately or not, I will just have to see. I believe that empathy is the highest of human capacities, and that loving kindness is the highest calling. I value human ingenuity and original thinking, especially when they serve to better the world. I believe in the path of nonviolence, and that we can learn ways to resolve conflicts without resorting to coercion or excluding the interests of minorities or the unrepresented. I believe living things are sacred and worthy of my care and time and protection if need be, and I feel called to give voice to that sacredness in the way I live and in the opportunities I am given to minister to others. Davidson has converted me in many respects to his thinking about Unitarian Universalist principles, namely, that they are not religious affirmations, but social and political values, and I stand by them as social and political values. I am willing to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of people, the democratic model, equity in relations, and the interdependent web. I don't find it too hard either to turn them into religious values. For instance, I believe in the inherent worth of all living beings, and that we gain dignity and or nobility in acknowledging and serving that inherent worth in all living beings. I believe there is an interdependent web of existence of which we are a part, and that this is nowhere more true than on the surface of our planet, and that every time I ignore this connectedness and the potential impact of the lifestyle choices I make, I not only diminish myself and the significance of my beliefs, but I also commit the sin of willfully adding to the forces which threaten the continuation of life on our earth. These religious beliefs transcend the interests and needs of my own being, but reflect my unique being. They call me to live according to self-transcending interests, and that is why I am glad they also help me to join with a wider religious community of people like you. So thank you. Thank you for having me here, for offering your corporate self up as a teacher. And thank you, Davidson. Thank you for sticking with me. I have learned a lot about the parish ministry and my own capacities for the ministry these last 10 months. In the end, as at the beginning, I am committed to serve the liberal religious communities I come into, ones like this one, where the causes of life, truth, peace, and pluralism enliven and unite us, one to another.
When you hear the kind of honesty and courage that comes through the words Vicki shared with you, you realize they set a mood that is sacred, and I want to keep honoring that mood. And want to talk to you, you may not like this, the way I talk to an intern, to give you kind of a condensed experience of what part of an internship is like behind the scenes and why. There are so many ways to approach the question of what liberal religion or honest religion is about. I wasn't sure whether I should start with the Bible, the ancient Greeks, or the cartoon character Batman. So I'll start with Batman. I saw the new movie, Batman Begins, this week, and I liked it. I thought 95% of it was kind of fast-paced techno-geek stuff that I could have done without. But what there was of a story was pretty good. And the movie even had a message. I knew that because they repeated it 4 times so that you wouldn't forget. The message of the movie is, it's not who you are deep down. It's what you do that defines you. And that's pretty good. That could be the message of liberal religion. It isn't about creeds. The center of religion isn't finally about beliefs or just thinking. It's finally what you do that defines you. And you can learn this at every single memorial service you've ever been to. There's a famous passage in the Bible that says the same thing in fewer words. In the Epistle of James, where it says, faith without works is dead. And the ancient Greeks, who I like even better than Batman or the Bible, the ancient Greeks had a famous saying that was at the very center of the Greek culture in the Golden Age of Greece. I think I first read it in Aristotle. It's been one of my central beliefs for over 30 years. And I think it's simply true, whether you like it or not. It goes like this. Plant a thought, reap a deed. Plant a deed, reap a habit. Plant a habit, reap a character. Plant a character, reap a destiny. Thinking right, believing the right things mattered tremendously to the Greeks because they saw that if you had bad or unhealthy beliefs, you would logically be led to bad or unhealthy actions, habits, character, and destiny. I believe that too. Just as children really do what we do, not what we say. Just as if you want to know what someone really believes, you don't have to ask them. Just watch them. Beliefs and actions and character are woven together so fine, I don't think they can be separated. That's why I think the idea of the priesthood of all believers that we talked about last week is so important in religion. Our lives are going to be run by something. And if we don't know what we believe, then our lives will be run by things we're not aware of. That's one meaning of saying that someone is demon-possessed. There's nothing supernatural there. That kind of a demon is a deep, maybe a primitive psychological script that can run your life for years without your even being aware that you're being dangled like a puppet. That's the cost of not knowing what we believe. And I have a story I've shared before here several years ago that's a safe story to share because I have no idea who this person was. It happened almost 15 years ago, and I was the theme speaker at a Unitarian summer camp in another state. There were about 600 adults there, and since I was the theme speaker, I was more visible than others. And people would come up to me through the week and start talking to me as though I knew them, and start sharing all kinds of thoughts and feelings, sometimes that were quite surprising. And one woman came up looking just awful and asked if I had a few minutes under that tree that we could talk. And I said, sure. And we went under the tree, and I've seldom been around someone in so much pain or hatred. And she talked seething about the husband who had dumped her. And man, the details were vivid and vicious and bitter and awful. And it was a hatred for him, for his soul, for his mother's soul, for his grandmother's soul, for the whole family's soul, all the way back to the apes, I mean, all of it. And
it was a seething hatred that went on for almost 10 minutes uninterrupted. It was just shocking. And she almost bled when she talked. It's that powerful. And it was very stunning. There isn't a lot to say to that. And I said, I was so sorry to hear her and feel her being beaten by this. And I said, when did this happen? She said, 10 years ago. That's a demon. 10 years ago. And I'll bet everyone in this room knows someone who lives like that, even if not quite that extremely. And maybe we've all done it. It's powerful. So what's the goal of life? The goal of religion. The goal of life, an honest religion, and this is foreign to most Western thinking about religion. This is where I think Western religion just has it wrong. The goal is not to be pure or perfect. God knows we can't do that. It's to be integrated and authentic. To integrate your fears, your shadows, your demons into your personality. You may not be able to get rid of them, but if you're aware of them and can name them, it can make all the difference. So much psychotherapy is based on the same idea, as is so much Eastern religion. It's at the core of Buddhism. Now, I hate to keep quoting cartoons for authority, but this was the point of the Batman movie, too. Bruce Wayne was absolutely terrified of bats, because as a boy he had fallen down a shaft and had a million bats flying into him and around him trying to get out. All his life he was terrified of bats. In one sense, that fear led to the death of his parents. Powerful fears. And the lesson he had to learn from a Darth Vader kind of character, played wonderfully by Liam Neeson, who made a marvelous evil man, the lesson he had to learn was not only to face his fears, but to incorporate them, to use their power instead of being abused by it. So he became the Batman. I think this is one of the most important teachings of existential psychology and of good religion, too. If we can learn what we believe, what we fear, what we love, and integrate all those forces into a character devoted in a way to serve high ideals, we have access to nearly all of our power. And there is a blessing that comes through that kind of integrity that I don't think you can get any other way. Plant a character, reap a destiny. Many years ago, I read a book by Carl Menninger, founder of the Menninger Clinic, which has remained one of the most important books of my life. The title was Love Against Hate. And the message that I remember seeing as a revelation when I was 21 was that love and hate are the same energy. In love, the energy is directed outward creatively. In hate, it is turned inward destructively. That woman at the summer camp, the love for her husband had turned to hate, but the hate didn't hurt him a bit. It just ate out her own insides and ran her life like a demonic puppeteer. And all of this is involved in what I think religion is about. So an internship, I think, should be tough. Psychotherapists need to go through psychotherapy themselves so they can be aware of their own driving forces before they're inflicted on patients. Chaplains who work with dying patients need to do their own personal work in dealing with their own fears about death. If they don't, they'll communicate their fear of death to everyone they're working with. And ministerial interns need to do more and harder work at trying to understand what they believe, what spirits and demons really drive them, than those who will one day trust them to have done this work. Behind the scenes of Roman Catholicism, priests learned the sacraments, the rituals, the meaning and use of the costumes in that religion of such rich ritual traditions. There's a lot to learn. Behind the scenes in the fundamentalist church, ministers must master the creeds and particular Bible passages that tradition uses. They learn many ways of saying that we are born sinful, that we can't be trusted, that we must learn to be obedient in order to be saved, and that we can finally only be saved by Jesus. There was a hint of this in the story Vicky told of her seminary professor saying she should ask Jesus to come into her heart. But behind the scenes in a Unitarian church, we do a different kind of work. I think it's harder and a lot more empowering. It's taking the priesthood and the prophethood of all believers as seriously as we know how to take it. And you can't do it in your head. Real religion is not intellectual. It's much more. As a wise voice coming from a very weird costume said recently, it's not who you are deep down, it's what you do that defines you. And as the even wiser voice of the German poet Rilke said almost a century ago, the vision that calls us forth blesses us even if we do not reach it. Everything in my experience tells me this is true. It is some of the best good news of honest religion anywhere. Anywhere.